Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And we are back to our normal show routine, which means basically, instead of having one topic where we go off the rails, we want to have multiple topics where we go off the rails. You know, just like old times. Anyhow, it's exciting to be here because I get to hang out with amazing people and have fun chats. So yeah, this is great. Speaking of amazing people and fun chats, Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well. I've been all week trying to get an Ethernet cable into the wall because they put in empty pipes basically for cables. And I cannot get the damn thing in there. Like I bought
the
cable
run
and
like a string through there, or a jet line.
No, they did run a string through there. Like so that part was the easy part. Like and I got one of them through, and the second one is being difficult. But if I do both at the same time, it doesn't work at all. So like I don't. So like it's this close.
Oh,
I can
just
feel
sucks.
It. Yeah, I'll get it probably. But it's been all week, basically. I've tried different things and bought extra tools and all of that. And yeah, my hands
That's
are
frustrating. Completely
destroyed.
Oh.
Yeah, because there's sharp edges everywhere and stuff. So yeah. No, it's been okay. But other than that, it's been good. I had the week off. So
okay,
I could
so that's
enjoy.
Nice.
I could enjoy the Apple event and make a little live and
By the way, it was
a
so
HomePod
cool
today.
to see you on Mac Voices Live. That was a fun surprise.
That was a fun surprise. See,
yeah.
That's why I didn't text you when the show was, because I wasn't sure. But I was like, no, that would spoil the surprise. So no,
it,
can't do that.
Definitely would spoil the surprise. And I was when I got into the show, or was led into the Zoom, whatever, and I saw you there, I was genuinely surprised and excited. And then someone said something, and it was like squirrel, and I was distracted, and I didn't get to comment on it. And so anyhow, I was very surprised, and that was awesome. So that was great. Yeah. Also awesome, and I'm always happy to see you too. Ben, how are you?
I am great. Quick question. Does anybody remember how to do this after the summer?
No.
Which
I
is
was like,
totally on brand for us.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, we need to remember how to do a show to actually do it. Yeah.
This is true.
We'll figure it
Wait,
out eventually.
What does that say about us? It basically tells you that we do not, even if we do a show, we don't remember doing it, right? Because otherwise we would remember how we did it last time. We could just do that.
Yes,
right?
We're basically drunk on technology.
We are the
okay.
goldfish.
Be a goldfish.
Be a goldfish. Yep. Speaking of being goldfish and trying to remember how this all works, let's try this. Since we typically, in normal times, everyone brings stories, who has the first story?
I should pick one. Go for it, Ben.
I'll allow Patrice to pick one here and take the first.
Ben.
Oh.
I knew you were going to pick this one, and not only did I know you were going to pick it, just in case, I have literally the same article already open. So, Ben,
yes.
Tell us all about game engine companies making really smart business decisions.
Yes. You know how we're talking about the articles being off the rails? This one comes pre-off the rails.
Yeah, this one didn't even have rails.
Yes. So, the current owners of Game Engine Unity have decided to come up with a new pricing structure, which is 20 cents per install.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know how well this went over with the current base? Not well.
Not well. Now, we should do a clarification, Ben. When they're saying 20 cents per install, is Unity saying per developer installation for developing purposes, or are they saying per user installation?
I believe it's per user.
Yeah, that's my interpretation as well.
Yeah, they used to have a sliding scale from 5 cents to 2 cents. So this is a pretty huge hike.
It's the kind of hike that I see pricing at least some game developers out of the market.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to tell you how well this has gone, the Unity offices are currently closed due to death threats.
Yeah, don't make death threats, people. There are better ways to address this. Yeah, part of the, as if that isn't enough of a problem. Another part of the problem that I'm seeing is that they're also making this a retroactive fee.
Oh, that is shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand charging for it. I'm not sure per install. I mean, that basically means when someone deletes it and reinstalls it, that's another 20 cents.
Yeah.
And that makes no sense.
Which happens quite a bit considering how many mobile games use Unity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There are thresholds where below a certain number of installs, the price doesn't kick in.
Mm-hmm.
But if your user base is that low, then you're probably not making any money on your game anyhow.
No. Yeah, you have bigger problems than Unity.
Right.
I mean,
which I have to say,
if it was like 20 cents per user, I would say okay, like maybe doable, because it's a one-time thing. Like when you have a user and they pay, you pay 20 cents to Unity. Okay, fine. Like, okay. Can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's per install. So even if like someone pays for your game and then installs it 1,000 times, you pay 20 cents every time.
Yeah. Yeah, you end up, even if you are charging AAA prices, which no Unity game developer is going to do, you would end up losing money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Unreal couldn't charge this.
Yeah, looking at the chart that's in the Ars Technica article, which, by the way, Ben dropped into the chat, so it's there for everyone. The threshold. Your revenue over the last 12 months is $200,000, and your number of installers lifetime of the product, not just over the last year, is 200,000. Then that, and this is the lowest threshold for the Unity licensing, then your pricing starts to kick in. So that would be 20 cents per install. Then when you go up to their Unity Pro level, now you're up to $1 million dollars over the last 12 months and $1 million lifetime installs so far. And then depending on the number of new installs per month will determine how much you are paying, which the higher the number of installs per month, the lower you pay. But for a lot of companies, this is a showstopper. And the fact that they have changed this and made it a retroactive thing as well, tells me if I were to get into game development, Unity is not an engine I would want to build on, because I have no idea how much it's really going to cost me and when it's going to change.
Yeah. Basically, overnight, they have made Unity a non-viable product.
That's pretty impressive. It's, you know, every time we get a company over the last couple of years, especially, it seems, making a really bad business decision, and we think, how this is the most ridiculous thing ever. There's another company that says, hold my beer.
Yeah. Tim, I was going to make that joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. I took your joke from you.
But I do have to say.
Well, hold my game controller in this case.
Right.
It is somewhat funny. Well, it's not, none of it's funny, but ironic, should I say, that Unity has achieved unity among its developers by being asshats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like further down in the article, they talk about like what counts as an install and like the whole like install bombing issue that I hadn't even thought about. Like if someone doesn't like a game or is a competitor or whatever, they can literally drive them into bankruptcy by just downloading the app and installing it and deleting it again and doing it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah. I mean, Unity has said that they're gonna try to like maybe change it so that it's a single user, but if like it on two devices, then it's two installs. But like if you install it on the same device, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. It still can be abused.
Yes, it can. Yep. And even if they backpedal now and say, you know, you're right, this isn't a good idea, they've already broken the developer's trust. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they could do to gain back that trust or goodwill.
Yeah.
Nothing at this point. Well, sell the company.
Sell the company, I mean, and then the new company creates guidelines that are somehow enforceable so that they can't mm-hmm. change them themselves. Because just saying, we are not going to do that, really, really, that's not good enough. And even like Unity a few years ago was talking about the whole thing about, you know, it's free to use, and of mm-hmm. course there were guidelines for that, but they said no, this is just what we're doing, and it turns out today no, that's not what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's what they're doing until they're not.
Yeah, I mean, right. that was kind of predictable. I mean, and I'm okay mm-hmm. with, I mean, I'm okay with them making money. Like if I mean mm-hmm. sometimes if you want to keep having nice things, you have to pay for it, but this is not the way. Like maybe just, I don't know, charge a fee per like on your based on revenue. If you don't make revenue, then
yeah,
you don't pay. And if you make revenue, maybe half to 200,000 as lower limit, say okay, if you're over 200,000, then I don't know, we charge you whatever 1% of that, or whatever, or like $10 or whatever you want. Like name a price and say, okay, whatever, for every million you pay $1,000.
I mean, honestly, honestly, what Unity as a company did was make Epic very happy.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because
they're not very happy anyway recently, so.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody is just going to like, well, screw this. We're going to go right to Unreal Engine, because we know where we stand with that company.
Mhm.
Mhm.
I mean, they have Epic has literally made building a game engine their core business for decades.
And they're likely to get some new customers out of this. One thing that I haven't seen answered yet, and And granted, I might have just missed it because I've had been, hey, Apple's news this week has kept me very busy. So
yeah.
Anyhow, the point is, I haven't had a chance to do a ton of research. What happens to games that are already installed where the developers say, you know, we're out. We are not playing the Unity game. Do the games that they've already made stop working?
Does Unity have a way
of flipping a switch and killing their engine for those games?
I would assume, I don't know anything about it, but I would assume, I mean, new installs will definitely not work. So yeah, as long as you have installed it, maybe it will keep working. But once you delete it, it's gone.
Yeah, I guess we'll know if we start seeing mass exits of games from the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Yeah, the problem with that is it's not like this is kind of like I don't know what's a good analogy for that. It's kind of like you've built your house with whatever, like with let's say wood. And now you're basically, someone is saying, well, we're going to charge you for the wood. And you're like, okay, so what am I going to do now? Because you can't just switch over to concrete or something.
Yeah.
That basically means you have to tear it down and rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the same problem here. You can't, I mean, you can sure stop selling the game and stop working on it and basically kill it. But if you want to keep it going, then you have to rebuild it with a different engine. And that is not as easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially, you would have to basically resell it as like a remake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And remaking your games to run on a different engine. I mean, that is not a trivial process.
No, that's making a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, different engines have different advantages and disadvantages and different ways of how things work and so on. So I don't think like the game that you make on a different engine would be to some extent different.
Yeah. You wouldn't even be able to reuse at least some of the assets that you developed for the game because they might not be the right file formats anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think that's probably just the smaller issue here. As I said, it's a fundamental change of your foundation of your game. So like, sure, like all the logic you can probably reuse and so on if you've written it in a smart way. But everything else has to change, and then it's a question of, is that, let's say, financially feasible or like business wise a good idea?
Yeah,
I mean, are you gonna make that money back?
Yeah, which is why I think we could see quite a few games go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the studios might still, if they can, might still work on a different game, on a different engine, and just redo something else, but that game is gone.
Yeah, and this also could potentially have a financial impact to both Apple and Google, since a lot of these are freemium games.
Yeah, which is probably also a problem with this, because I mean, you don't necessarily get any money from an install. Like someone might just install it and play it for free.
Yeah.
And you still pay for it for that install.
Yep. And I mean,
that's a good point.
You know, as everybody knows, I'm an iOS user. On Apple's, you kind of have a purge option where if you don't use a game for a while, it uninstalls the game itself, but leaves the files. So it can be basically reinstalled, and then you're back to where you were. Well, every time that does it, if that's 20 cents to the developer,
Yeah, good point. I don't even know how they would track that in iOS, to be honest.
Related to this, I just saw an article on The Verge that I will drop in to the chat. Unity has canceled their town hall because of the death threats.
Oh my god.
So yeah, people are pretty upset about this.
Yeah. And CEO John Riccitiello obviously looks like he's a gamer there.
Right. Yeah, he has gamer
written all over him.
Yeah. Has anyone taken a photo of him yet and dropped him into the "Hello, fellow kids" meme? Because
nobody could.
Yeah, hello, fellow gamers. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic that he is sitting in front of a Disrupt banner. Because he just disrupted his entire business model.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
Yeah. So,
yep. Yeah, John, you're going to want to update your resume.
Yeah, so now I'm curious. I'm a casual gamer. And now I need to go back and relaunch all three of the games that I own for my Switch and see if Unity pops up in there, because I'm just curious. The games that I've bought off of Steam, the handful of games,
mm-hmm.
how many of them are using Unity? And and I've bought a few games off of Apple's Mac store and iOS store.
How many games in Apple Arcade are Unity or the Google equivalent?
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, they shut down the Google equivalent.
That's true.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Yeah,
but I mean, of light duty to kid gaming, Unity is a powerhouse. It is to casual gaming what Unreal Engine is to hardcore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think weren't they even on the stage Apple keynotes a couple of times? I think so.
Yeah, yeah. This is something you're going to see reverberate amongst the entire tech and gaming industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of tech industry.
Oh, Patrice.
I want to just jump into the next story.
That's okay. My own Patrice is because your transition, I think, is actually better than the one I was about to do.
And so, now to the show host.
Let's
not talk about cars.
Yeah, my transition was going to be, I can see a lot of traffic going to other game engines. And speaking of traffic, Patrice, why don't you tell us about your story?
Okay. I actually like that transition. So you might have heard about this, maybe not. The Mozilla Foundation published an article about, or I think, I mean, they have a series of articles anyway, like Privacy Not Included, I think is the series. So they published an article about cars and privacy in cars. The headline is, "It's official, cars are the worst product category we've ever reviewed for privacy." And that might surprise you, because you would think, what data are cars going to collect and whatnot? And actually collect a lot of personal data, including, for example, I think there was, I don't remember which manufacturer it was, but like in their terms of service, one of the manufacturers in their terms of service, basically they tell you that they collect they might connect medical information, genetic information, sex life,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that and might sell it. Share and sell it. It's like, and you have very, I mean, either no control at all or very little control, which I'm not even sure is legal. Mm-hmm. Usually there should be a way to opt out of that. Stuff like that. So it's mm-hmm. like 84% of all checked manufacturers sell, share or sell your data, which is a lot. Like it's really ridiculous. Like, yeah. And you think, I mean, why? Like, cars are expensive. Why? Like, it's not that it's a free thing and you basically pay with your data for it. So why do manufacturers have to do this?
Make more money.
Yeah.
Right.
Like make an extra $20 per customer or something.
Yep. Of the worst ones, they are either publicly held companies or publicly held companies owned by Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Let me see where he's on the list. He probably has check marks. Yeah, basically, he's one of the ones that has, like, this. There's this table on the page where you can see, like, what Tesla is the only one that has 5 axes. So they do everything.
Yeah.
They use data, like, it's track everything, secure, like AI. I think
you're right. All right. Like, okay. Off topic, what brand is KN? I've never heard of KN.
KN.
Is that like
that's Kia. That's brand? No, that's Kia.
Yeah, Kia.
That's the new Kia logo, like as of a couple years ago, I think.
That's a horrible KN. Logo.
Yes.
I'm looking at it and I'm still not seeing Kia. Like KN. It's KN.
That is true, yeah.
But if you want to read into these a little bit further, why it seems like a bunch of them, Hyundai and Kia are the same company.
Mm-hmm.
GM is Cadillac, GMC, Buick, Chevrolet, probably more. Then you got Ford.
Yeah, I mean, Ford there's probably Lincoln. Like 4-5 companies in total.
Yeah. Yep, Toyota and Lexus, VW and Audi. Yeah, Nissan, and then Tesla, who you have no privacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the bad thing here is, I mean, you don't really have much of a choice. I mean, other than buying a really, really, really old car, because, I mean, anything in, I would say, late 2000s, mid to late 2000s, probably has some data collection because it has a computer in it and some connectivity probably. Even if it is whatever, you to bring it into the dealership and they download the data and then sell it, that might work. So you would have to go further back than that. So like you can't even opt out really, because one, there is no opt out, and you have to use your car usually.
Yeah.
And are there any hacks to disable the wireless transmitter in these cars?
Oh,
and
probably.
And if so, would they still work?
But then if you do that, then all the like stuff that you want to use doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody is wondering why GM made the short-sighted decision to develop their own proprietary car infotainment center or system, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they made it pretty clear it was all about monetizing their customers.
And
this totally backs it up.
Yeah, there's a quote from a Tesla's customer privacy notice in here, and it's basically, if you no longer wish for us to collect vehicle data, please contact us to deactivate connectivity. Please note that certain advanced features such as over-the-air updates, remote services, interactivity with mobile applications, in-car features as location search, internet radio, voice commands, web browser functionality, and so on and so on. Like all of this.
Moving the car.
Basically anything you would want doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can disable it, but then it essentially renders your car useless.
Yeah. It says this may result in your vehicle suffering from reduced functionality, serious damage, or interoperability.
Yeah.
Inoperability, not interoperability. Mm-hmm. So basically, you can't really opt out.
Yeah, the opt-out really is don't have that brand car.
Yeah, don't have a Tesla.
Yeah. The opt-out is you get a couple horses and drive it like you're Amish.
Well, that's actually better because while horses usually collect something, it's not data. It's not your data. They don't care about your sex life at all. Like,
they don't.
Not their thing.
Hey, related to that, here's a sentence I'm going to read from their report that I absolutely loved because I think it totally nails just how bad this problem is. It's so strange to us that dating apps and sex toys publish more detailed security information than cars.
Yeah, and of course the car wants to know about both of them.
Yes.
Right.
For some reason.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. Oh, and Toyota, they have 12 privacy policies.
What?
Yeah.
One isn't enough?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Even though the car brands we researched each had several long-winded privacy policies, Toyota wins with 12, we couldn't find confirmation that any of the brands met our minimum security standards.
Yeah. Oh, they have policies, but they ain't about privacy.
No. It's very clear. It's all about selling your data.
Well, car manufacturers have always been very poor with their track record on software security.
True.
And so this just seems like it's on brand.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe that's the key takeaway. Just don't expect anything in your life to not collect and sell data.
Yeah. And it sucks for a lot of people who are giving away an insane amount of data just by having and driving a car. And at the same time, a lot of those people are probably posting on Facebook that old meme about, by posting this on Facebook, I hereby do not give Facebook permission to use any of my content, blah, 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 because mm-hmm. they're so worried about their privacy. And yet they have no idea that, that the car knows that they make out in the back seat.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's not even just the car owner. Like, if you're a passenger, you implicitly consent to your data being used.
Right. Yeah. I remember seeing that in one of the stories. Mm-hmm. And I think in that same story, one of the car manufacturers, when asked about it, said it's the responsibility of the driver to inform all passengers
mm-hmm.
about the privacy consent for being in their car.
Yeah. So basically,
hey everyone,
the horse is
on you.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I guess at some point when I replace my car. Because I live in a culture where you can't get by without a car, I'll just get a label that's on the dashboard that's a warning that there's no privacy in the vehicle, and any and all activities that are performed in the vehicle will likely be sold.
Yeah. Yep. So your children may be sold.
For some people, that's a bonus.
Mm-hmm. God, that could happen. They'll just leave the kids in the car. Like,
all right. So now what I want to see is a cottage industry for a little add-on module for cars that sanitizes the data that that the car manufacturer actually gets. I mean, there's some things that they probably need to have to verify that they're actually getting data. Then there's other, most of the data they don't need. So you could just have random content going through, or the content is just blocked.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are certain services where I would say, okay, that makes sense to some extent. Like if you let's say your manufacturer was offering map services, like not Google Maps or Apple Maps, but their own maps for some reason. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, maps is a bad example. Let's say music streaming is a better example. Then you probably want to sign up with them, have an account where you have your music and your playlists and whatnot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they will have some data about you. Doesn't mean that they have to sell it or share it or anything like that, but they have some of your data.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's okay in this case.
Sure, because you are, with your own knowledge and consent, signing up for a service.
Exactly. So as I said, maps is a bad example, unless you say, okay, I don't know, I want to store my addresses maybe in the cloud so that I can use it in multiple cars or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because maps usually, I mean, for the maps itself, you don't need the data, right? Because that can be completely anonymous.
Right, yes.
Yeah, so this is it. For some services, I can see it. For I'm like, I mean, why do I need to know? I mean, the selling and sharing is the problem, not necessarily the collection. Like, I mean, even for software updates, I'm like, okay, why do I need to know who's updating exactly? Right. Isn't it enough to say, okay, mm-hmm. It's this model of a car.
Right.
And yep. Did the update work or not? Okay, that's good enough.
Seems to me like that's all you really need.
Yeah, just and then you sure don't have to sell or share
that software on the right car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you don't have to sell or share that. It's just for internal use, yeah. And that's fine. So I said some data collection can be okay, but mm-hmm. they're just collecting everything. That's the whole problem everywhere. Everything gets collected and then sold.
Yeah. Right. Why does my car need to collect personal health data?
Yeah, I don't know.
And the answer is it doesn't.
I mean, I don't know how it even gets that. That's a separate question. Like, how does it even get to that?
And well, there's speaker or there's microphones in the cars.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
All right, so now you know if someone coughs or sings poorly.
Now, if you, for example, you're using a voice assistant, like your car has a voice assistant, that is usually a way how a lot of that data could be transmitted because you're asking for something that implies or includes that information.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there is data in there that is medical or whatever, and there is the, and we're collecting and selling it part. Like, mm-hmm. you know, those cookie banners on, like, those cookie consent thingies on websites, I mean, especially in the European Union, everywhere,
mm-hmm. yeah.
They're not necessary. If you, as a website owner or service owner, only collect the necessary data for your operation and nothing else, then you do not need a cookie consent. You don't need a consent at all.
Mm-hmm.
You only need it when you're sharing that data or selling the data with third party.
And look how many sites you get mm-hmm. the consent pop-up.
Yeah. As annoying as they are, they show you who the bad people are.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now I'm thinking, as we've been talking through this,
mm-hmm.
the implications of all of this data being collected, it's even worse than I was originally thinking. And it was pretty bad for me already.
Yeah.
But okay. So in the United States, we are very quickly rolling back rights that people mm-hmm. have had for decades. And in some states, asking your car navigation system to, say, give you directions to Planned Parenthood could now be given over to law enforcement and used as part of a criminal case against you.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, that was actually in that article as well. Like, it wasn't just selling or sharing. It was also like law enforcement. And in some cases, it wasn't even, oh, you need a court order, which, I mean, they're legally required to share that data then. Sometimes it was just information requests. So someone could just request it and they would share it.
And, like, it was very there's vague. A long history of big companies doing that. Just, we got an information request. So.
Yeah,
at AT&T, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, see the Ring spy cameras.
Oh yeah.
Yes, my neighbors around me, a couple of them have Ring cameras, and I noticed on the day I was moving in that there were a couple Ring cameras, and I immediately started thinking about, even though I'm not going to be doing anything wrong, how do I need to conduct myself when I'm in range of these cameras because I am being recorded?
Yeah.
So, Jeff, first thing, you need to wear pants.
We've already got a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but you know, the fact that I'm now cognizant of how much of a surveillance state my surroundings have become, it has me thinking about everything I do that's in public and how it could be interpreted later on.
Yeah, so, pretty much.
Yeah. You know what I interpret in a really, really positive way?
TSO hosts. They won't spy on you.
Yes. Yes. It's TSO hosts and how they are just absolutely awesome at what they do. So TSO hosts, this is a company that offers web hosting services. They help people buy domain names. The stuff that you need so you can have an online presence, they make that easy and reliable and stable for you, which is awesome. And so what they're doing is taking that and they are helping us. So they're giving back to the community, which is awesome. They're helping us because to get the resources and maintain the resources we would need to live stream shows, to host a website and have a server space for all of the show recordings, all of that takes a lot, and it would be more than we would be able to manage to get on our own. So what they're doing is very generously giving us those resources so that we can be here and live stream every single week, and we can have a website so you can go and find the show recordings, which are sitting right there on the server, so you can watch or listen to episodes anytime you want. And they're doing that just because they like us and they like giving back to the community. So we really, really appreciate what TSO Host is doing. And it is not hyperbole to say we wouldn't be here without them. So thank you, TSO Host. Now, I'm saying thank you right now on the show. And that means anytime anyone watches one of the recordings, they will also hear me saying thank you. Now, what you can do to show your thanks is hop on social media and then thank TSO Host for being here. Tippity tappity type. Thank you, TSO Host, for supporting the British Tech Network. That's all it takes. Super easy. Only takes a second. And let them know that you appreciate that they are here supporting us. So thank you, TSO Host. I know I keep saying it, but seriously. All right.
And get yourself a good deal in the process.
Oh, that's right. Get yourself a good deal in the process. So let's say that you have an idea for the most awesome domain name. Why not use TSO Host to buy it? Because they make it super easy to do. And and get that in your cart. Well, let's say that you also want to do a website to go along with your super awesome domain name, because why not? Add a hosting package to your cart. And also add the discount code BTN20, so you get 20% off your order. So not only are they being super generous and helping us out, they're being super generous and offering a great deal to you simply because you're part of the BTN family. So again, thank you, TSO host, for being here. Speaking of supporting the family, Patrice, please, can you help me out and do your amazing job of telling people all about the chat room?
Yeah, we have an amazing chat room. That's what it is. So if you are listening to this live, like we're live streaming this show, and if you are listening to this live, then you already know that. You can watch us record every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show. And by the way, also Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show. So if you're into the Apple side of things, and tomorrow we're going to reveal the keynote poker results. So that's going to be an interesting show. But it's always a fun show. So if you're into the Apple side of things, 4 p.m. UK time, join us live. And then you head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com to join our live chat, and then you can talk to the other people who are watching. You can see the links we're posting. We're now, since we're back into the normal show rhythm, show format, summer of fun is over. We're also posting news articles, we're posting links to cool things, all of that, all of the cool stuff, and all of that is in our chat. So join us live. That's how easy it is. But let's say you are listening to this in the recorded form, so as a podcast. That's what it's for. That's why we record it, or on a website, like as a video. Totally fine. That's what podcasts are for. You obviously cannot join the live chat. That's not going to work since it's recorded. But you can still see the chat transcript at least. So all you have to do is head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then on that page, there's a little calendar that pops up. And you have to select a date. And you select the date for the recording of the show that you want to see in the transcript. And for today, for example, that is the 14th of September, 2023. September 14th, 2023. And if you do that and put that in the calendar, you will see everything that we talked about.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that. And also, thank you for giving us our one brief moment of professionalism on the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, let's get rid of that.
Yeah, well, how about instead we just do some cool things? So who has the first cool thing? And if anyone has my cool thing, I'm going to be so bummed. So far,
let's see.
My cool thing is safe. Patrice, tell us about yours.
So my cool thing is a new TV show. I don't remember. I think Ben, you might have picked it in the cool thing episode in the summer of fun. I don't remember. It is Ahsoka.
No, I went with Wheel of Time.
Okay, good. Then I don't remember. I just remember someone talking about it recently. So Star Wars, Ahsoka, a new show on Disney Plus, new Star Wars show on Disney Plus. And it's really, really, really cool and interesting so far. It's a really good cast. I especially like crap, what's his name now? The British Doctor Who actor who
David Tennant.
David Tennant, who voices the robot. Enjoy that. He has that, like in Doctor Who, he had that funny, witty kind of character, and the robot has that too, and that's just so fitting. Like having a funny video like robot is so funny. I said it's so far a really good story. Of course, visually beautiful, like the like makeup, everything, like the entire thing is just beautiful, beautifully shot, really good storyline. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, what else do you want? Like the music is great. Mm-hmm. And this is the first season. So there's, I think, four episodes in as far as I remember. So they're coming out every week.
Yes.
Ahsoka is, she was a Padawan of Anakin Skywalker, which you might remember as Darth Vader.
Spoilers. Oh, wait.
Spoilers for a movie that's pretty old by this.
That's, probably older than some of our fans.
Probably, yeah. Yes. So, yeah.
They do not know the power of the dark side.
Yeah. So, but she's a Jedi, and yeah, there's fun to be had. And my favorite character is actually Sabine. I like her hair color. She's also fun and quirky. And
I've always enjoyed haven't Sabine. Seen,
yeah, we haven't seen anything yet. I mean, but I have a feeling she's a rather complex character.
Yeah.
Like sometimes Jedi are kind of, oh, they're the good guys or girls, and they're like, not they do the good things. Yeah, they should usually, but like sometimes they're very, even in the movies, they're kind of simplistic. It's like, okay, you're always doing the right thing. You're good. You're perfect. You fight well and whatever. And I have a feeling she's not that.
Yeah.
Patrice, have you watched Star Wars Rebels?
No.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm asking just because.
Clone Wars.
Yeah, or Clone Wars. Yeah.
I might have seen that.
But your take on Sabine Wren as someone who hasn't watched the Rebels series, which was what, 4 seasons? That I think that's a really insightful take on Sabine Wren, because these are characters where we had 4 seasons to really dive into who they were and see them as more than just a good guy or a bad guy character, but someone that's having to make decisions that will have repercussions for them, good or bad, at some point later on.
That's what I really like about this show, especially. I think some of the shows had that too. Like, I mean, if you really think about it, even Darth Vader, was a bad guy in a way, but had also some other character traits and did some good things at the end. So,
I'm definitely enjoying Ahsoka. The pace of the show is slower than I expected. That's
which I enjoy,
and yeah, so I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying it's slower than I expected, and I feel like it's really well cast. I'm enjoying all the characters, and as someone that has watched the Clone Wars series in the correct order multiple times, getting to have the references to that series in addition to references from Star Wars Rebels,
yes,
is and really getting, nice.
Yeah, and getting to see the greatest character of all time in Star Wars in live action finally.
It's and don't elaborate so people can choose which of the characters you're referring to, and they'll be right because it's their perspective, whichever one it is.
Yeah, which remind me, Filoni, you've given me everything else. Where the hell is Hondo?
I was thinking about that.
But no, then again,
I said it's a really, I like the pace, because I mean a lot of Star Wars shows are a lot about action and like the plot that's happening and good versus evil or whatever, and not always a lot about the characters. Sometimes, I mean, The Mandalorian was maybe a little bit more about it, but even still, like, there still was still a lot of action, and this one is more about the characters.
It is, which makes sense, because
at least the main.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are calling Ahsoka Star Wars Rebels Season 5.
Which it basically is.
And yeah, so and I'm
so,
okay
so
with
So you're
that.
Telling me I should watch that?
I think you would really enjoy it. And in addition to watching the development and progression of these characters that in some of them that you've actually seen, some of them that they're referring to only by name so far, at least. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to see that development progression through the series. It's also really interesting to see the progression of the writing, because mm-hmm. where the series was at the beginning when Dave Filoni was starting the writing of mm-hmm. it, and this is coming off of what he had learned through Clone Wars, mm-hmm. But then looking at season one at the beginning, and then compare that to the writing of season four at the end. And I mean, you can watch the writing progressing through mm-hmm. the seasons. And I thought that was really fascinating, yeah. especially when you go back and watch it again, if you're really into it, and you can really focus on those changes. So yes, this totally fits with what a season five of Rebels could have been. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I'm enjoying the series.
Yeah, and I mean, and kind of say that, the kids who started with season ones of Rebels started as kids, most likely finished the series as teenagers. And now that there has been some time, live action fits with them as adults.
Yes. Yeah, we know that they're teenagers at some mm-hmm. point in the series, because there is a reference to one of the characters' birthdays, and they turned 16.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I have to say, they do a very good job of looking at some of the morality of what the Jedi have done in the past. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest. Ahsoka was a child soldier during the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And both Ezra and Sabine were child soldiers during the Rebellion.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, children are put in yeah. situations often in Star Wars yeah. that they shouldn't have to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do address that.
Yeah. I mean, especially that with Sabine, you're dealing with someone, well, Ahsoka as well, someone who got very high up in a military organization in a very young age.
Patrice, you do realize with your pick, you took us from, hey, we're talking about technology, to doing a second podcast episode tagged
yeah, I was thinking about that.
All about Star Wars. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we could just keep going on and on and on yeah. about Star Wars and Ahsoka, but instead, the Let's bottom line is, cool I want to get lunch. Okay. So, Ben, yes. tell mm-hmm. us about your cool thing.
So, mine is the USB-C version of the Backbone One. If you're asking me why I'm picking this one as an iPhone owner, I will get to that in a second. Yes, this will work on your Android phone. However, it will also work on your iPhone 15 or 15 Pro, because Backbone is including a firmware update that will make it work on iPhone.
Yeah, but they also support the Lightning version, so it doesn't have to be a 15.
Yep, if you have a Lightning version, but I don't think this is going to be a isolated case. So this is the future where no matter what phone you got, The amount of great accessories out there are going to be a wealth of riches. And having owned the Lightning version, this is a fantastic controller.
So this controller, as I'm looking at it, I'm feeling like if you want to turn your iPhone or your Android phone into a Nintendo mm-hmm. Switch, basically, this yeah. is what you get, because the yeah. phone drops in and the game controllers are on like a slide thing. So it mm-hmm. clamps in place for whatever size phone you have. Mm-hmm. And now you have a portable game console.
Yeah.
For $100.
Yeah. And include, they have both. If you want black, they have the regular version. However, they also have a PlayStation version, which is white and has the PlayStation type controls. And it's officially licensed.
This is very cool. All right. So for $100, you turn your iPhone or your Android phone into a Switch.
Yep. Yep.
Very cool.
Or in the case of things that we'll be talking to tomorrow, you might be turning your iPhone into a PlayStation.
Or into a PlayStation. Yep. Very cool. All right. Well, then I'm cutting that one a little short only because I'm hungry. But this is really cool, and I really like it. All right. So my cool thing, I'm bringing us full circle. Let's go back to Star Wars. And Lego just announced their Venerator class Republic attack cruiser kit. I know, Ben. I waited till I was sure you were sitting down. So this one is $649. It's beautiful, and it is freaking big. It's
big.
So for real world measurements, 54 centimeters wide, 109 centimeters deep, and 32 centimeters tall.
What does that come with, Rex?
It comes with I believe it's Rex that it comes with,
and Yularn.
Yes. So $650, basically 5,374 pieces. So this one's a little more expensive per brick. Actually, wait, no, I did my math wrong. This is a really good price per brick. No, wait, I am doing my math correctly. This is a little more expensive per brick, because at basically 650 pieces or dollars, crap, I would expect this to be about 6,500 pieces.
Mm-hmm. And it's about 12 cents per brick.
Yeah. So, a couple extra pennies per brick, which is basically you're paying Star Wars licensing, which is why Star Wars Lego kits tend to cost a little bit more.
Yeah,
they also have two minifigures included.
Yes.
And you do pay a little bit extra per minifigure. This kit is freaking huge. Yes. And
money is no issue.
And yeah, when you I'll look at this that. One,
money is no issue.
Money is no issue. What is an issue is this thing is so big, where are you going to put it? Like for me, I'm looking at this thinking I covet this kit, and it'll be available on October 4th. If you are a Lego member, then it's available October 1st. So you can bet all of the people that have Lego accounts are going to snatch these up as fast as they can. Mm-hmm. Although I'm looking at this and I'm still thinking, where could I possibly put this? And
Take the book off the coffee table. This is more important.
Well, for me, this would be my kitchen bar. I don't need a place to eat. Yeah, I just need to display this. Yeah, it's big. And it looks really, really nice.
Yeah. And Lego, if you're watching, if you would do a limited edition white imperial one, the Force would be with you.
You know, once you've got the instructions, it's just a matter of going on Bricklink and buying what you need. And you could make your white version.
Really?
Just saying. Yeah. There you go. I do know people that that get the instructions for kits and then use them as the basis for their own versions of something. And this would be a great one for that. Another one I've seen people do that with is the Walker, the AT-AT. Mm-hmm. And they'll build it out so that it's a Joomba base. That's a Star Wars Rebels reference for everyone. And so I've seen some pretty cool Joomba bases. All right. So now that we've totally nerded out and then nerded out again on Star Wars, Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me every week here on The Big Show on Thursdays and on The Mac Show on Fridays. I also was on Mac Voices Live this week, and I think the first part of the episode is already out. So go check that out if you want to hear all kinds of people's thoughts about what happened this week. You know, something happened. We'll talk about that tomorrow. You can find everything I'm doing, all the social media links, the podcast, the projects, literally everything on my website, thepatrice.com. And if you want to join Mastodon on a friendly instance, thetechhangout.social is mine.
Awesome. Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Jeff, on the in the menagerie of social media networks, you can find me at Ben Rathig. You can find my writing at Rathig.tech, where I am currently writing an analysis of the Apple event. And you can find me Tuesdays on the aforementioned Mac Voices with Chuck Joyner. Tonight, aka Thursday nights, on In Touch of iOS with Mr. Dave Ginsberg. And Thursday and Friday here in the on the Big Ten Network. Yes. We're now doing college football. The British Tech Network on the Big and Mac shows.
When you said the Big Ten Network, I just assumed you meant the network that has the sexiest people.
The top 10.
Well,
yeah. I mean, Ben, you could totally have you could have a college football show on BTN if you wanted to.
Yeah, I could just say some of my female cousins might think that is actually the case.
Who am I to judge? All right. Okay, so I'm Jay Gamut on the various social media platforms. Mastodon, that's where you're going to find me pretty much all the time. Then let's see. Oh, yeah, Instagram. I'm posting there too. But everything I post on Instagram goes to Mastodon. So you can look in one place and find everything there. Let's talk about shows. All right. So Tuesdays with Ben, and this week with you, Patrice, Mac Voices Live. That was a lot of fun. Then here on the British Tech Network on Thursdays for the Big Show, then Thursday evenings on In Touch with iOS, Dave Ginsberg show. Ben, I'm assuming I will see you there this evening too. Then on Fridays back here for the Big Show, Brian Chaffin and I record the Context Machine. We've already dropped our show for this week because we wanted to talk about Apple's keynote event. Also this week, I recorded Mac Geek Gab with Dave Hamilton, and we talked about Apple's keynote thing there too. So you can find a lot of me this week. I got around. yeah.
You're All making right. the rounds.
I've been making the rounds. Yep. So with that, thank you so much, Patrice. Ben, both of you are awesome, and this has been so much fun. And everyone, you hear me say that like every week, but here's the thing, it's absolutely true. And if I'm not telling people how much I appreciate them, how will they know, right? So seriously, this has been awesome getting to hang out with both of you. And then let's see. Hey, everyone, thank you for being here and participating, watching, listening live. You are all awesome. Everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. Ewan, thank you for being you. And Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. And TSO host, thank you for being here and supporting us. If you're not watching the Daily News Show with Kyle, you really need to check that out. So please go do that. And yeah, join us tomorrow for the Mac Show so that you can see just how poorly I'm assuming I performed in my my predictions for Apple's keynote event. And yeah, I'm assuming everyone did better than me. That's just a safe bet all the way around. And then join us again next Friday, again, for the big show. And then on Friday for the Mac Show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.